In this segment of the show, we are discussing the future of, and I'm very happy to welcome Jan Vermeulen on the line, who is editor-at-large at My Broadband. What are we looking at? We're looking at 5G. What is it, and what does the future hold for it? Jan Vermeulen, thank you so much for your time. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
It's only a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on.
Jan, so this issue of 5G has been so contentious of late, with governments around the world raising concerns about data privacy, as well as even conspiracy theories at this point relating to COVID. So that's another thing that we'll save for just later on as a fun little aside. But we know that this past week, the UK Parliament announced that Huawei, for instance, would be stripped out of Britain's 5G phone networks by 2027. Another big story this week, which we'll get onto in the tech world, was on Bitcoin scammers hacking Twitter accounts. But coming back to Huawei and 5G, first of all, unpack for us what 5G is, what the excitement and what are the kind of arms race that it's caused. And then we'll talk about how Huawei is being used as a political football, or is it?
Yeah, exactly. And 5G, this happens about every 10 years or so, where we see a acceleration into a new generation of mobile technology, right? So we saw it with 4G. I started doing what I was doing back in 2010.
Yeah.
And that's when I joined My Broadband. And I remember the excitement around 4G and LTE technology back then.
Yeah.
And the same thing, we literally seeing the exact same thing with 5G rolling around. 5G brings to the table a few other interesting things. We'll see how that plays out. They call it network slicing and all kinds of stuff. But what I think people are most interested in is it's going to give you faster speeds and hopefully a better overall experience, right? So that's the promise of 5G technology.
Yeah.
And what you see every 10 years or so is equipment manufacturers. So that's Huawei, Nokia, ZTE, Samsung, everybody who makes cellular gear, they need operators around the world to refresh their networks so that they can continue to make money.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's an incredible amount of hype around these new generations of technology because it's the only way that a sustainable business in equipment manufacture is able to work.
Mm-hmm.
And so they need to be constantly advancing to encourage operators around the world to upgrade their networks so that they can continue to make money. And so that, you know, then they build 5G chips into, or back then 4G chips, now 5G chips into phones. So you've got to refresh your phone and so on. So it's about that constant technological advancement. I mean, obviously the technology itself, it needs to offer the end user something better. Otherwise, we wouldn't buy it.
Mm-hmm.
But the hype around it is in service of this larger commercial aim as well. So I think it's important that we don't lose sight of that.
Okay.
And so, regarding Huawei, this is an interesting one, and it's something I'm honestly still looking into.
Mm-hmm.
But at first blush, I'm looking at this and going, okay, so in the UK, you're saying that all Huawei 5G gear needs to be stripped out of the networks. But what about 4G and 3G and 2G? Is that not a security concern?
Yeah.
You know, and so immediately there's a flag there that, you know, the logic does not bear itself out. And so I'm going, you know what? If you want to say that you are concerned that Huawei is becoming too much of an entrenched de facto monopoly when it comes to cellular equipment, say so. Don't hide behind security concerns and downright borderline racist stuff with regards to concerns over privacy in Chinese manufacturers. But that said, while I want to mention that, there's no talk of ZTE, who is also a Chinese equipment manufacturer.
Yeah.
This is just about Huawei.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, you know, concerns about, you know, the government of China spying on the United States and its allies. But I mean, would they just use Huawei for that? Wouldn't they use ZTE too?
Mm-hmm.
So to me, the whole thing is incredibly fishy.
Yeah.
You know, if it was really about security concerns, then I think we would have seen a completely different reaction mm-hmm. from the United States and the rest of the mm-hmm. Five Eyes nations. This is not about security. This is about commercial concerns. This is about business, and this is about making sure that Huawei doesn't land in a position, or that they don't allow Huawei to land in a position to be able to call the shots on all the networks around the world.
So fundamentally, a very flat-footed reaction to Huawei's, I guess, Huawei's leadership in this instance in terms of developing that 5G technology and outstripping the world, as it were.
Yeah, exactly, and even its own competitors in China, Huawei, and really, it's also a success story of the last 10 years. 10 years ago, no one knew who Huawei was. They did make affordable network equipment, and we did use some of it here in South Africa.
Well, we obviously we were getting adverts that were teaching us how to even pronounce the name of this product,
yes.
And now you don't think twice, right? As it's such a part
exactly.
of our consumer experience, yeah.
Exactly. Much like Samsung, which launched itself into prominence with the Android ecosystem when smartphones became a thing around the 2010s, they built their success on top of first emulating what their competitors were doing mm-hmm. and then innovating, right?
Yeah.
So this is a pattern that you see in the technological world all the time. And so, yes, back then, I mean, there were just hordes of competitors when it came to network equipment, not phones necessarily, but the equipment that goes into the cellular network. Nokia Siemens Networks was a thing back then, Ericsson, Motorola. So some of these companies are still around and they still make equipment, but there's a reason networks prefer Huawei.
And
there's no doubt that I believe it's accurate to say that these other companies have fallen behind, and some of them don't even exist or make their network equipment anymore.
Yeah.
They just exist. They continue to exist as brands only, and Huawei has completely grown to dominate the market. And I think that is probably closer to the truth. It might not be the whole truth,
sure.
but it's certainly closer to the truth than complaints about security concerns.
So, you know, to that end, you've mentioned the idea or the phenomenon of emulation and then followed by innovation. We know that in the China-US trade war, stalemate, whatever is currently going on, a Cold War, the abiding accusation by the US government or by the Trump's government is that, you know, China, the infringement or the historical infringement on the intellectual property rights of U.S. companies is something that we're not quite sure how he wants to push back on that or have
yes.
the Chinese make good on that. But that seems to be a bone of contention that doesn't quite get clarified or resolved in this dispute. But then we also see the arrest of Meng Wanzhou, who's
yes.
Huawei's chief financial officer, arrested in Canada, and this on a request, right, from the US, and that pertains
yes.
to allegations of essentially dealing with the Iranians against sanctions. So that becomes another whole complicated matter in and of itself for Canada, China relations, and for Canada US relations. But the idea or the phenomenon of emulation and then innovation in the tech sphere, is it something that is limited or unique to how the Chinese operate, or is this something that is seen throughout, you know, the tech sphere in general? Because I think what you talked about, or what you alluded to, that binary view of how the Chinese operate, which tends to border on the racist, tends to only apply to them when we talk about people that, you know, countries that copy or companies that copy.
Right. Right. And the fact is, no. I mean, obviously there are huge concerns about specifically how U.S. and not just U.S. but U.K. and U.S. allies intellectual property is kind of just stolen and monetized against them, used to compete against them. And there are perhaps some valid concerns there. But as I said, this is a pattern that's existed in technology since I can remember, the dawn of PCs. So perhaps a short history lesson. So let's go back to just the start of smartphones, right? Apple accused Android manufacturers, and Samsung in particular, of stealing its look and feel.
Mm-hmm.
It accused Android of stealing multi-touch. Sure. And in fact, if you look at the early Samsung devices, I mean, they had the button in the middle exactly the same as iPhone, even though Android was not really designed for a button in the middle.
Sure.
And so they absolutely, they stole from Apple, right? I mean, and in fact, there was a settlement with Apple eventually. And I remember there was one of the Samsung devices, like if you look at the evolution, I think it was from the S3 to the S4 or the S4 to the S5. Mm-hmm. You can see that they had tweaked the industrial design of the Samsung so that it just would not violate intellectual property laws,
just
right?
Barely.
Exactly. And Samsung was a South Korean company.
Sure.
It's not a Chinese company, right? And mm-hmm. and so that's just in the sphere of smartphones. In PCs, then Apple would stole, for lack of a better term, but it's not stole. I mean, it's more complicated. There was a licensing agreement mm-hmm. and all kinds of stuff, but they stole the idea of graphical user interfaces from Xerox, along with a whole bunch of other stuff,
sure.
Networking, object-oriented programming, and so on. Obviously, it wasn't an outright theft, but certainly Steve Jobs back then had wangled a deal with Xerox that far undervalued the stuff that the researchers at the Palo Alto Research Center from Xerox had managed to build.
Mm-hmm.
And so you had the researchers at Xerox saying, you're giving Apple the kitchen sink for a song here. You're not valuing this technology accurately. Mm. And the Xerox executives didn't listen, and they let Apple have it. But so there's a more complicated relationship than outright theft. But certainly there was. It's not that Apple invented the idea of the graphical user interface on computers or the mouse or anything like that. They got it from somebody else, and then Microsoft infamously stole it from Apple and Xerox. And so you have, so that's just inside America. There was this huge, the PC as we know it today is a theft, effectively. It's a reverse engineering of IBM's basic input-output system, BIOS. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get too much bogged down in the technical detail, but effectively what happened was people who built PC clones, IBM PC clones, had to reverse engineer the BIOS to make it happen. And that happened inside the United States. That's what I'm saying. It's a pattern that repeats itself in technology all the time. Young companies need to emulate and steal first. And then as they grow and mature, then they begin innovating. I don't know if there's a different way to do it. Maybe there is, but certainly if you want to hold your own against the powerhouses in the technological world, that seems to be the pattern that works.
Yeah. So fundamentally, when you become the hallmark or the standard bearer, you become the ground floor in which other companies will enter and innovate and probably grow, yeah. Hopefully not outstrip you if you're a big dog in the industry. What's clear to me?
So the next step in this is people are now going to start stealing from Huawei. That's sort of the natural evolution of the thing.
Well, that's something to track, certainly. So what's clear to me then becomes a question of, is it fair or is it as simple as drawing lines and parallels and saying, well, let's conflate the Huawei or technological company with the regime that is currently running the country that they originate from. In this instance, obviously, the CPC is quite entrenched and quite strong. But is it fair, really, in business terms, to conflate this company with the political regime?
Yeah, fair in business terms is an interesting one. I wonder if that's a contradiction in terms.
Sure.
because it's purely a tactic. It's a tactic. It's as you say, it's a conflation and an obfuscation of the truth. So yes, every good disinformation campaign has a germ of truth to it. Like, the fact is there is a connection between Huawei and the People's Liberation Army in China, right? There's definitely a connection between Huawei and the founder of Huawei, who's a hero. He's a local hero there, Ren Zhengfei. But so between him and the regime. And what's happening is you're seeing that Huawei's, the governments around the world where that are concerned about the dominance of Huawei are using that connection to their advantage to say, we should watch out for this because, you know, we all know that there's problems with this regime. There's this link between Huawei and the regime of China. And so we should be careful that we do not open our doors to them. That then causes a geopolitical problem.
Yeah.
And so, but that is a smokescreen, right? Because the fact is, the Americans do this themselves, not with the buy-in of their tech companies, but they would, for example, there's documented evidence from whistleblowers like Edward Snowden, where the NSA and the CIA, I forget which three-letter agency, but one of them, would intercept Cisco routers and install spyware into those routers that then get deployed in networks overseas so that they can spy on the traffic that's flowing over networks in foreign countries.
Yeah.
And so this is how the world works now.
Interesting stuff.
So to accuse the Chinese of doing that is kind of like, yeah, so what? You do the exact same thing. And so, but the thing is, the point is not about an absolute truce here. The point is to have a hook within which to execute your strategy.
Mm.
We can certainly discuss and get to the truth of it.
Yeah.
But ultimately, the goal of the United States government, the current regime in the U.S., is to protect its interests. And funny enough, not necessarily the interests of the tech companies in the United States. The companies like Facebook and Google have spoken out against the ban. So this is about something else. It's not about protecting the intellectual property and the business interests of the big tech companies in the United States.
Yeah.
It's about something else. It's about that. It's about this the overall trade war. Just about the tech space.
Yeah, we can carry on this conversation into debates around what's currently happening with TikTok. But I guess a technology commentator saying this week that ultimately for consumers, what it boils down to is a simplistic argument, perhaps an unfortunate one, where you need to make the debate about whether you want your information in the hands of the Americans or in the hands of the Chinese. Very, very quickly, before we say goodbye, Jan, I want to ask you your thoughts on the Twitter hacks that we saw this week, where essentially Bitcoin operators or scamsters hijacked the accounts of well-known people. And it caused quite a stir, whether it was Elon Musk or Bill Gates, Kanye West or Barack Obama. What do we make of this?
Yeah, so this is an interesting one, because what we learned out of this is something that kind of we've suspected for a while, but there are people inside Twitter who have administrative access to the level that they could tweet on your behalf. And I think that's the thing that's concerned people the most out of this thing. Because how this hack happened, and to Twitter's credit, they did play open cards with this. When it happened, they came with an after-action report to explain why it happened. So effectively, the attackers targeted administrators inside Twitter with what they call spear phishing attacks or social engineering attacks. And so that is a highly targeted and sophisticated attack to go after someone who is tech savvy and get them to and trick them effectively into giving up their username and password.
Sure.
Now, armed with the admin username and password for Twitter, these attackers chose to go in and hijack the accounts of over 100 prominent checkmarked individuals, including, as you said, Barack Obama, Elon Musk, and Bill Gates, and tweaked out a Bitcoin scam.
Mm.
That in itself is an interesting one to try and follow. You know what these attackers might want to do with the Bitcoin that they've raised through the scam, and whether they could have done something more creative, you know, by taking over, for example, say Donald Trump's Twitter account or something else. But certainly, I think what's of greatest concern to folks, and especially given the debate that Donald Trump has started with Twitter, is the fact that there are people inside Twitter that have access to people's accounts to the point where they can tweet on their behalf. Does that mean that they also have access to our direct messages, our DMs?
Absolutely.
You know, it raises all kinds of questions that Twitter has to answer for now, and it's high time.
Really, really dynamic conversation there. Thank you so much, Jan Vermeulen. Always a pleasure. I guess we should have that TikTok debate very, very soon. And are South African children, youngsters, should South Africans be worried, or in the global sort of in the global perspective and playing field, we're just small fry. We're just the grass that these elephants are biting on, and we need not worry.
Yes, I'd love to do that. We should definitely discuss it in future.
Fantastic. That's Jan Vermeulen, editor at large at My Broadband.